Welcome to episode 4 of Canon Conversations with K Crush. Today I am joined with the phenomenal slack key guitarist Alexander Wong.
Hey,
Thank you again, Alex, for doing the interview. And of course, we had a couple of delays, and yeah, I'm excited to be right back on it. All right, let's start with the first question. So what is a show or song that you can't get enough of right now?
So throughout the day when I'm running errands or when I'm at the gym, I really like listening to podcasts. I really just like listening to people talk about stuff, kind of like what we're doing now. But a podcast that I just had to binge and just zoom right through was this podcast called Deeper, and it's by an artist on Spotify called The Bay Church. And this podcast was basically the main guy speaking on it was my friend from when I was going to school in Boston. He was doing a PhD program at Harvard in religion. So we became friends during that chapter of my life and spent a lot of time talking. And I was doing that while I was also doing a minor in philosophy back during that time. So the fact that he had this whole podcast, I was like, oh, I have to listen to this. And let me tell you, this guy is like the LeBron James of philosophy. When it comes to just theological knowledge and philosophical knowledge, he's always on it. So for me, that was just, it was like a treasure trove for me listening to that podcast.
Podcasts are so amazing, and there are so many different things that you can learn from. And me hosting this actually started from a podcast. I had some clients who had a podcast called Lemon, and
Oh,
they
nice.
were short an interviewer, and I stepped in, and it was a lot of fun, and I guess I did a good enough job to be offered to do more of these. And I learned so much from them, about stuff like anti-Asian racism, and a lot of LGBTQ plus issues, and yeah, so they're very, very enlightening, and I think they're great. Yeah, so I think it's great that you found one like that kind of gets you thinking. All right, and let's get to the next question. Can you tell us about your upbringing in Oahu, Hawaii?
Yeah, so I was born there and I was there from basically being born until the age of 18. And for me, it was interesting because my parents were divorced. So I lived in a lot of different versions of families, essentially. And every different family I was in had a different idea of what life is and what it should be. So because of that, it sent my energies like in a lot of different directions. Because, some people thought, oh, I should be doing this, and some people thought, oh, I should be doing that. So I think it really gave me a diverse foundation. And I think I see the effects of that in my older life because whenever I end up anywhere, I'm like this alien that just shows up and like lands on this planet and then interacts with people. And then when it's done, I go fly back to Mars or something. But I think what it did was it kind of instilled within me this kind of, I would say, curiosity in just people that are different. I don't expect anyone to be just like me, and I think any situation I go into, I'm really just I'm pretty aware of the fact that everyone, is just trying to get their needs met, and everyone is come to whoever they are now based on using all of their rationality. So, but when it comes to the album I just released, SK1, the song titles are a lot of them are correlated with locations that I spent a lot of time at when I grew up on Oahu, like Lanikai. My mother and my stepfather actually lived in this townhouse in Lanikai. So I spent maybe a first couple years of my life maybe there. So there was that song, and then they later ended up in Kailua, which is another name of a song that's on my album. And then my father originally lived, and my grandfather also lived in this place called Mount Alani Heights, which is another song on the album. And of course, now my father lives in the Diamond Head area, which is another song. So all these songs on this album that I just released are correlated to places in Hawaii that, I lived in or spent a lot of time in. So I think it's really just set the foundation for who I am as a person.
Wow, I think that's really amazing, and it kind of just goes to show that Hawaii is a bit of a magical place. And and as I'm listening to all this, I'm like, this might be that might be a good place that I should probably add to my travel list and get
Oh
to.
yeah, come visit.
Yeah, and I did, because there are so just so many different, there were a lot of positive vibes in SK1 as I listened to it. And I found it to be, really relaxing. And
Oh
I think now the next time I get that listen to it, I'll picture more of Hawaii. And yeah, I think it's a very beautiful album.
wow. Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Right, moving on. Can you tell me a little bit about what was it like at the Berklee College of Music?
Wow. Okay. So to preface things, I was at the Berklee College of Music for longer than I should have been. I was there, I think I started going part time somewhere 19 and a half, but I really was there full time from about 20 to 25. But that cues you in on the fact that something must have happened. And what happened was two things. One, I had a sleep disorder called sleep apnea, which I still have, but now I have stuff to kind of help me with that. But I
Gotcha.
didn't know that I had sleep apnea, so I always just felt like I was like dying all the time, and I didn't know why. And I think it really affected me psychologically as well, which was just hard, going into the defining decade of the 20s. So I was just always, everything just felt like a dream, like at all times. But I ended up taking on three majors and two minors.
Oh,
Yeah,
that's a lot.
I was doing contemporary writing and composition, contemporary writing and production and songwriting and music business. And then the two minors I was doing was philosophy and psychology. And it was like this, it was just like a whirlwind of stuff. But I ended up, kind of figuring it out as I was going along. It was just really hard being in my early 20s. It was very difficult. But on the flip side of things, I think the Berklee College of Music is, it's one of the best music schools in the world, especially for being well-rounded in everything. And I think that going there was this ongoing anxiety that you could just never learn at all because there was just so much to learn. If they stopped coming up with new stuff and you spent the rest of your life there, you still couldn't learn half of it. So that's just, and I think that's the nature of Boston itself. Whether you go to Berkeley or you go to Harvard or anywhere, there is this ongoing anxiety that there's just so much information out there, especially in this time that we live in, which I think some people call it post-truth, which essentially means that it's hard to even know what's true. So who's the authority on what's true, So then it makes it even more questionable. Like, are you even building in the right direction when you're learning something? Because there's so much stuff to kind of different directions to be looking at stuff from. But that was, I would say, I did a lot of stuff. I studied orchestral conducting. I studied arranging, I studied production stuff, and I would say that just from those years I spent there, it gave me enough to think about for the rest of my life. It gave me enough to think about for the rest of my life, which is quite interesting. In such a, it seemed like a long time, but in the span of a whole lifetime, it's actually just a blip. So yeah, those were very interesting and turbulent days.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. And I think anyone who's been to college, probably relates a little bit. And it makes me think, I'm like, geez, I've been out of college since 2014, and Every now and then, I always still have dreams. I'm still
Oh,
in
yeah.
college because, that anxiety lasts so long. And, and then you learn so many different things. And I think you take some of those lessons and it kind of applies into your regular life. And, and as you were saying now, I was like, oh, I bet you that, what you studied kind of prepared you to, to make your album. And, it's funny, every now and then I look at the Wikipedia of an album and you see, who did the arrangements and, certain parts of production. And it's
Oh,
like, I can't understand that. I bet, he understands it now. Yeah,
yeah.
so I think, that's interesting. And yeah,
Yeah.
that's really cool. All right, so it's my understanding that you were away from playing guitar for, for quite some time. And I believe, having played guitar myself and having not played it, myself, I know it's a bit of a journey, as you stop playing and, you kind of lose some of your abilities and, and you kind of were gone for a while and then came back and did an album, which is just insane. Can you tell us how you originally got into playing guitar and then what brought you back?
Yeah, so for me, throughout my life, I've always been a very experimental person in that if someone presented me with a certain idea, I would just go do it and I would just do it. And I would say that what's also interesting is that when I get into something, I tend to get into it quite deeply. And I'll give you an example is when I was really young, when I was 15 years old, I went and watched this Nutcracker performance for ballet. And I remember watching it and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. So I then went to the ballet school that was hosting this show, and I asked the guy, hey, can you train me? And he said, okay. And he trained me. And then by the time I was 19, I was actually studying at the Boston Ballet School, which is where I went before I went to the Berklee College of Music and how I even ended up in Boston in the first place. But that alone is an allegory for the fact that for me, I'm kind of experimental, but when I get into something, I can get into it quite deeply and really commit to it. There's like a part of me that kind of floats around and looks for new ideas that might be good. But then there's a part of me that is willing to commit hard to something that when I realize it is a good idea. So I would say that when it comes to like playing the guitar, that was the same story. I didn't really have an inkling of talent for music. I mean, my parents tried to get me to play the piano and the violin when I was very young, but I remember just the violin kind of was really squeaky and it made my neck hurt just holding it. And the piano, like my teacher actually resigned me as a student because she found it too painful to teach me because I was so unmotivated. And I remember just staring at the piano keys and thinking that they looked like Oreos and it just made me distracted and hungry, But something clicked for me when I was maybe 14 or 15 and I remember I just had a really good guitar teacher who, by the first or second day, he taught me how to play all these songs, G, C, D, E minor. But he actually got me to do something that was really fun that like I had an emotional connection to in a short amount of time, which was so much different than my piano training, which was learning all these masterpieces, of course, but I had no real emotional connection to it. And it was like something that had a really high skill ceiling before you were even sold on wanting to do the thing. So, yeah, it's something clicked for me with the guitar, but I stepped away from it once I went to the Berklee College of Music because, as you know, I did three majors and two minors and
Oh,
all
yeah.
kinds of, like there was just so much going on. I didn't have time anymore. And I think when I was younger, I practiced a lot because it was fun and there was nothing else to do really. But when I was in my early 20s, there was just way too much to do where practicing fell very low on the hierarchy of priorities for me. So I really just stopped playing for a great amount of time when I was at the Berklee College of Music. But I came back to it to record an album after my grandfather passed away, because essentially for his funeral, what everyone was doing was everyone was it's a big part of, I think, Asian heritage that everyone kind of does some kind of task in the funeral preparation, essentially, and helps to kind of put on this funeral ceremony. And everyone had their task in my family. And I think for me, I figured my task would be creating some music to match with this documentary footage they had of my grandfather. And that's what I did. And I listened to the songs I made for that, and I was like, oh, this is kind of good. But to fast forward a little bit, I was actually focusing on like hip hop music and pop music and stuff. And it came to a point where I thought maybe I'd just make a Slack Key album. And because one, I have years of playing the guitar in my history, but two, it's representative of the place that I came from and of like the places that I spent a lot of time in. And it was part of like the mourning process for me of mourning this relationship that I had with my grandfather that now he's passed away. But coming back to recording the album after not playing for a while, it was challenging but easy at the same time. It was challenging because I didn't have calluses on my fingers anymore, so it's just like really painful to like play again. But I kind of had to like relearn how to play. But that was the best part of it, was that when I kind of reapproached the guitar, I didn't see it the way I used to, because at the Berklee College of Music, I studied songwriting, but my real master class in writing songs was actually making beats. I made a lot of beats in Logic, and you get the like all the components of the beat and like the synthesizer lines, and then you would grab the mic and you would sing over it. And really what that allowed me to do was to be able to kind of see a composition and to play it back, and then to see how do I make this better and more interesting, or how do I create contrast between these sections. And it's very much like writing an essay in like Microsoft Word. You can write the essay and then you can read it back and be like, oh, this part's unnecessary, or maybe I should add this part, or move this part from the end to the beginning. And that very much, making beats was like writing essays. Like if you work in these DAWs, you can kind of see it, you can listen to it back, you can choose which section to listen to. But I think that mindset I really carried over into these guitar compositions. And when I went in to record these guitar compositions, I approached it very much like making beats, actually. And I think that's why for a lot of these songs on the SK1 album, there is a cyclical nature to some of them, but there are also times where it breaks out of that mold that you're used to. And there's this dance between certainty and uncertainty, which is something that you hear within, a lot of different like pop songs and stuff. It's there's a lot of this orchestration and just loops of hooks, and then also times of novelty presented in the songs. So it wasn't hard to come back and compose, because I had the composing background. And not knowing how to forgetting how to play the guitar was actually great, because then I wasn't locked into my old muscle memory of anything. I could kind of create new muscle memory out of nowhere, which was really nice.
That's pretty incredible. For me, it's like I haven't played in quite some time. And it did happen during college, so I was getting more busy. And then always, even to this day, I prefer taking notes by hand. And I've never been a person who types my notes, and it kind of made my hands hurt. And then recently, I've kind of gotten back to it, and it's kind of like, oh geez, do I still remember how to play these chords? And it's like, am I playing this right? But for me, it's kind of been a little bit frustrating, because it's like I've been wanting, it's like, ugh, I know I can do this. I used to be able to do this, and I'm playing in, and it's like, yeah, not what I pictured in my head. And, but I think it's great that you kind of push yourself to change a little bit and to not, recreate what you were. And, and I do think, and I'm like, one thing about me is like when I played younger, it was more about, making noise. And, as I'm older, it's more about, making a more, kind of maybe more a little bit of a, jazz, so to speak, way of kind of, making it a nice sound that's more structured. And, if any of that makes sense, it's a little bit hard to explain.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I really do think that time away from things, when you come back to it, you definitely bring something totally different to the table,
Absolutely.
which I think is nice, especially if when you left that thing, you felt that you were at a plateau.
Yeah, and in your case, I think it, you learned a lot of different areas of music, and you had all of these other different, you were of inspiration and different, genres of music. So I think it kind of, I think it gave you the tools, to make such a great album. And, and I think for most people, they probably see it as like, wow, it's crazy that someone goes from not playing guitar for years and then, then comes and, and does such a great album. And, and then I would say it's, it's really fueled by your natural talent, with guitar. And, you're not using a bunch of other, things to essentially compensate. So, I
Yeah.
think it's, very, impressive. And, that's what really drew me to doing this interview, because it really is a bit, a bit crazy, because a lot of people, you do music for, a long time to really, become that good.
Well, a big thing about the album, listening, if someone were to listen to the songs and count or conduct to the songs, they would find that a lot of the songs on the album, they modulate in the key signature essentially. So a lot of the songs are very in a lot of different kind of like experimental key time signatures essentially. I think that came out of an instinct that I developed from taking all these well studying orchestral conducting. And I think from conducting so much, it kind of taught me how to like internalize a lot of different key signatures that are used less frequently. And it also kind of taught me this idea of tempo modulation and how it can be used to convey emotion. There's a lot of orchestral pieces or operatic pieces in which when you conduct it, the singer will just sing this long note and you don't know when it's going to end. So you kind of have to kind of just sit there and then you cue the orchestra to come back in when they're done. So it's not like it's not like a drum machine where you can just, have a click track on there. It's not like that. But I think that when I was approaching composing this album, I gave myself a certain challenge, and the challenge was that I wasn't going to multi-track. Which basically means that it's just one guitar that you're hearing on all the songs, and that there's no other tracks that are happening. It's a solo composition. Like if you listen to Debussy, he's got stuff like Clair de Lune or Reverie. That's just one piano. And there's no multi-tracks going on. Now, if you listen to Debussy's La Mer, these kind of like orchestral pieces, there's a lot of stuff happening. But I think for this album, I wanted it to have a sense of intimacy, kind of like a Debussy piano piece, where you knew that you were just listening to one guy playing a guitar. And I think to make it interesting now, because you can't add contrast or remove contrast by having different instruments appear in the song, I had to play a lot with the idea of tempo and silence. So when you listen to these songs on across the whole album, you'll hear that there are times where like there's just silence, and you'll hear times where it speeds up or when it slows down. And these are all elements that I've used that I picked up just from orchestral conducting that were put in the song in order to stretch the gymnastics of a guitar composition. So I think that really, I think another thing about having it just be one guitar that was really nice was that the project would see its end. In that, going in to record this album, it was very fast. It took maybe, it was less than 90 days that it took. And the reason why is because it's just one guitar. So because of that, you just go into the studio, you play the song, you go and you produce it a little bit, and then you put it out there. Whereas if I had this idea of making, a song with a ton of instruments on it, that project could take a couple of years. And I think what's so nice about this is that one, I think when you look at the cost to reward ratio, it really kind of paid off for me. Because it was like, okay, I get to stretch my musical creativity without it taking forever, which I think was a really good deal.
I absolutely agree, because it can take, quite a long time, and then, when you created something, so good and, such a short amount of time, and, and as you, dedicated the album to your grandfather, I'm pretty sure it was, in a very, on a very personal level.
Oh,
And,
yeah.
that goes into my next question. Can you tell me a little bit about your grandfather?
So he was a very interesting man. He was a doctor and very much older than me. I think when I was just born, he was already in his late 60s. And I think a big part of hanging out with him so much from a young age was that it really affected the posture of my attitude because he was always talking about the idea of what is right and wrong, and also about what's the meaning of life, because he's in his twilight years and he's reflecting on life from a different perspective. Whereas I'm just being born right now and I'm just kind of seeing life for the first time. So it's kind of like if someone at the beginning of the story gets to talk to someone at the end of the story. And I think that spending so much time with him in that sense made me a very serious person from a young age. From a young age, I was always like kind of like having an existential crisis because of that. But I think that he was a very interesting person in that he had six other siblings, and because of that, he was always put in this position to take care of everybody. And because of that, I think it really affected the idea of what I is to him, or what he is. I think, for example, like whenever a homeless person would ask him for money, he'd just give it to him, or if he'd see somebody, he'd just give him food or whatever. And he wouldn't remember any of these things. He would just do it. Because I think his whole concept of I didn't really have a limit on it, because he looked at everything from a very tribal perspective, because he was born in a situation where he had to take care of everybody. So I think because of that, it really kind of started me off in life in a position where I had someone to look up to and someone who was very altruistic.
Oh, I think that's amazing, and and I certainly see why you created this album for your for your grandfather, and and it was, I can tell he was a beautiful person, and and that was the the influence on your album, which came out so beautifully. All right, for my next question, I'd like to ask if you could collaborate with any artists, alive or dead, who would it be?
When it comes to a lot of like my musical inspirations and things that I find to be interesting is I really like video games and TV shows, but I remember I really liked the soundtrack for the game The Sims. the first one, it was like this game where you basically play as like this virtual character and live a virtual life, and it was very interesting. But the soundtrack that was built around the game was this jazz piano improvisation, which I found to be so interesting because they could have done anything with the soundtrack and it probably would have worked, but it's like, huh, I wonder what made them pick this kind of like jazz improv, you know? It's interesting. Or the show Family Guy, a lot of the jokes are kind of like potty humor and stuff, but then they use like this like either like orchestral or like jazz ensemble to color the episodes, which I find is so interesting how you can use something that is like so serious to pad something that is meant to be just kind of casual, you know? And I think that for me, I always found that to be very interesting. So I always thought it would be interesting to work with like some kind of indie game designer or some kind of game designer to create a soundtrack for a game that might be kind of like, it could be cartoony, it could be serious, it could be not serious, but to pad it with like some kind of like very like, you know, like this like slack key kind of guitar playing. I always thought that would be interesting. But there's a game called The Neverhood, and it's a game that came out in like the 90s, but it was like this claymation point and click adventure game. And the soundtrack is so weird. It's like fusion music with like some folk elements, blues elements, some jazz elements, and it's just so interesting how the designers of the game thought that that would match. And it does match because what ends up happening is you play the game and you get used to hearing the soundtrack and your brain makes it match. And I think that that's so interesting how you can do that. Because they could have picked any soundtrack for the game, and eventually your brain would connect it. So I really do think that the components of the music play a big role in your memory of what the game is. So
Absolutely.
I think when it comes to like collaborating with other mediums of artists, it would definitely be either like video game creators or TV show creators.
No, perfect. Yeah, that's a really interesting response that I, was not anticipating, and and very, very unique. And I think that that's amazing. And it's just another something that's getting my thoughts rolling. And
Oh yeah. But I definitely recommend checking out that soundtrack for The Neverhood because it's so interesting. I played that game when I was like maybe 5 years old, but I think that really helped to add to the palette of my musical appreciation from a young age. And the game is just so interesting as well. I think it's like a cult classic.
Yeah, I never heard of it myself, but that'll be something I will be on the lookout for. For a next question, do you have any future projects currently in the works?
So right now I'm currently in the middle of finishing SK2, which is the second album. And basically the whole idea was that it would be a trilogy. So SK1 through 3. And I think part of that was me exhausting kind of a lot of this the emotions I have around the passing of my grandfather. And also kind of really exploring this ability to play the guitar that I had from a younger age, which I just kind of left on the shelf for a while, and seeing where that would take me, and kind of putting a three album package together so that I could see the end of it from the beginning, so that I knew that this had to be good. Because it's like I can see that there's a limitation around it, and that since it's going to be a trilogy, you know that you can't just have songs that you make that you don't try hard on. Every single song I create, I have to put in an effort. Like this is going to be one of the songs on the trilogy, and once this trilogy is over, I can't go back and revise it. So that's part of, I guess, what motivates me with that. But that's currently what I'm working on.
Perfect. Yeah, that sounds amazing, and can't wait to hear the next ones. And yeah, so that was my final question,
I will
and
say
thank
though
you.
that
Oh,
that
go ahead.
this I will say though that the second album I'm working on is a quantum leap over the first one, in that when I rolled out the first album, there was a lot of, I would say, I didn't really know what was going to happen because I had never made an album before. So going in and making this first album, I mean, I had to do everything from the beginning, like learning, okay, so how far away from the microphone should I be when I play the guitar? Or how loud do I play when I play the guitar? What is it going to sound like after you hear it coming out of the speakers? Because sometimes you play in the studio, you think it's going to sound a certain way, and then you hear it coming out of the speakers and you're like, oh, it sounds different. But there was a lot of learning in the first album. And it's kind of like if you play a video game that has like a ranking system. Generally, like they'll have you play a few games that they call like placement matches to figure out where are you going to end up? Are you going to be like bronze league, silver, gold, et cetera. And the first album for me, a lot of it was just being placed in a universe of quality and not really knowing what was this even going to sound like. So on the second album, I've listened pretty thoroughly to all the stuff I did on the first album. And I've taken into the account things that I would want to improve on. And it's already like a quantum leap ahead of the first album. Everything from like the microphone positioning to the type of microphones being used to the type of production techniques and everything. It's just all on another level because I've had time to kind of to see what happened after I made the first one. So I think I'm very excited for the second album and rolling that out.
Yeah, I'll definitely be on the lookout for that one. And I recommend for all of our K Crush listeners out there to listen to SK1 and stay tuned for SK2. Thank you again, Alex, for doing the interview, and this was pretty amazing. And you have so much insight, and honestly, it made it such more easier for me as an interviewer because there were so many questions. I'm like, wow, he got these like three answers in one. Very, very
Oh.
amazing. Thank you again.
No, thank you so much, CJ.